Welcome to Tom Papa's Come to Papa.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Come to Papa, your favorite podcast among all the millions of podcasts. We are giving you a little bonus today. Yeah. What are you doing, Tom? It's Thursday. We only talk to you on Tuesdays. What's going on? This isn't when I pick up my kids. I don't sit at the soccer field and listen to your podcast on a Thursday. Well, I'm very excited because I have a special guest here today, the very funny comedian Joe DeRosa, who is a good pal of mine. And I was driving around in Southern California in Los Angeles, dropping my kids off at school. And I come out of the parking lot and I make a turn, kind of sleepy-eyed in the morning. And what do I see? A billboard. A giant billboard with Joe DeRosa's new Comedy Central special, You Let Me Down. Just glaring at me, where normally I see Tom Cruise or one of Seth Rogen's or one of his people that he makes 1,000 movies with. No, they're not up there. Joe DeRosa is. So I gave him a quick call. His special is out right now. It's on Comedy Central. It's available on iTunes. It's streaming. And he rushed right over to do the podcast and spend a little time with you guys. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Good to see you, buddy.
It's great to see you. That was so nice of you to text me the other night and invite me on, and I was very touched by that. That was a very like selfless act.
Well, yeah, it's not. I'm happy to have you. It's good to have a good comedian on the podcast.
No, I meant it was selfless of me to come down here.
To do it. That's true.
Come on, the old.
It's very true. The old switcheroo.
The old switcheroo. No, it was. I was honestly touched. I was like, man, that's really nice of Tom. Like, you certainly didn't have to do it. And then now you're sitting here saying it's a bonus episode. I'm really like, I'm over the moon right now.
This is special. You might want to add this to your IMDb resume right now. If you take off your phone and update your resume, I wouldn't mind. Normally Paul Morrissey is here, my partner here at the podcast. But because we were just hustling up, Paul won't be here today. So maybe he can just listen to it.
Maybe, and then maybe he can listen to it while recording, and then he can talk while he's listening to it, and it'll be like he was here.
Isn't technology amazing?
It is really.
You just do it a little special for yourself, and now people can stream it on their phones.
Isn't that crazy?
They could watch it anywhere they want. Are you happy with it? I haven't seen it yet.
I'm very happy with it.
How long were you working on this new one? About when was the last time you recorded anything?
A while ago, I went through a phase where I put an album out every year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Or like every year and a half. Because there was nothing else to do. Nobody wanted me to do anything else.
Right.
So there was a period where my first three records, they came out consecutively close to one another because I was like, I just didn't have anything to do, and I was like, I'll just keep doing the road as much as I can, wherever I can, and I'll just keep recording stuff.
And this is while you were living in New York?
Yeah, this was mostly New York. And then I moved to L.A., and then I put out a fourth CD of B-side stuff that was like left over from all the other recordings that I never used.
But recorded it as something new.
I just compiled it as like a compilation album. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. How was that? Did that feel like a lesser album to you because it was stuff that didn't make it, or was it?
I got two CDs out of it, and I was just like, you know what? I was like, I don't care. If you hate it, you hate it. If you like it, you like it. But here's two CDs, you know, like of stuff. Like, there's bound to be something on here you like. I thought it was worthwhile. Thanks. I just did it because my favorite bands do it. So I'm like, well, why can't a comedian do this?
Yeah.
You know?
It's really smart. And did people respond? Did they like it?
They did, but then a bunch of internet trolls. All my album ratings right now are like a star and a half because I pissed off all these internet trolls.
What do you mean?
A guy said something and they got mad at me, and it was, you know, whatever. It's fine.
Oh, was that part of the radio kerfuffle?
It was. And despite the fact that that's all passed, and and myself and all parties involved are friends again and right. very cool with one another.
Yeah, it was
You'd
all
be surprised.
Dusted up.
Trolls don't go back and change their star rating.
That's hilarious.
But it was well received. People seem to like the idea.
That's a good idea.
Well, thanks.
But you took like it was all recorded and you just edited it together. You didn't go out and like try and put that into a new set.
No. I cut it together.
Right.
Which I thought was part of the charm because some of the recording quality was bad.
Not
unlistenably bad, but bad.
But it would sound like in a club or whatever.
Yeah, was like clear and crisp, and you could tell like, oh, that's something from that last CD.
Right.
And then some of it was like kind of muffled, and you were like, oh, this is really old. Like, right. You know, like because I don't know about you if you did this or not, but when I first started, I tried to record albums on my own before I was ever ready to record an album.
Right.
Because, you know, a lot of comics, myself included, when you're 7 years in, you think you're a genius.
Yeah. And the technology caught up where you didn't have to get permission to make it. You could just make it.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I remember the first time I ever tried to record an album, we weren't where we are now, but you were at least able. We shot it with a video camera, and it was right when you were able to pull audio off of digital DV tape, DV cam tapes, easily.
Yeah.
So that's like the oldest stuff on the record, and I never put it out. And I say the record opens. The first track on the B-sides record opens with a clip of that of me saying, "This is supposed to be a CD, but I don't think it's going to be."
Because it's great.
You know,
that is such a cool idea.
So,
and kind of a ballsy idea because I was just looking at set lists. I keep a book where I put all of my TV sets down.
Oh, that's cool.
Just because to cross reference it and see if I had done something, you know. I was just looking through it today because I hadn't updated it in like a while. And I was looking at some of the sets, and this is stuff that was on TV, and my stomach tightened. I was like, "Oh, really? You did that joke on the Tonight Show? Oh, that's all right." So, like, I could imagine it must have been a little painful at times to be like, "All right, I guess I'm going to put this joke on there."
Yeah, there was. I tried to be fair. I tried to just be like, "This is all going to go on to show." To just the idea was let's capture a sort of a time period.
Yeah, no, it's great.
You know,
but it takes a little fortitude.
Yeah, there were moments where I was like, why am I screaming in this joke? What is?
At least you didn't have to see yourself.
No, that's great.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, wow. Why was I wearing that?
I'll tell you what the most cringeworthy stuff was, and this was stuff that I don't think this stuff made it.
Uh-huh.
There were a couple shows where I was like, initially with the idea, because the record before that was when I got the idea, because we tried to record the album one night with the label that I was working with at the time, and we got it was packed, and we were like, "This is it. This is going to be the show."
Right,
and it was front to back drunks. And we got a solid hour. We got the whole show on tape of me just dealing with drunks.
Wow.
And it's a mess of a show. So I said, let's put that out as the album. And they were like, no, we're not going to do that. but it can be a bonus disc. So that's the bonus disc of my third CD is like, hey, listen to this. It's an attempt to record what you just heard.
That's great.
And this is how bad it goes. So that's when I got the idea for the B-sides thing.
Right.
I was like, I have all these recordings laying around. I should compile like a thing of all the times comedy has gone wrong.
Right.
And I thought that would be the bulk of the album, and that's the stuff that didn't go on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because 90% of it, when I thought I was so right, I was like, you sound like an asshole right now.
Right.
You're just yelling at somebody.
Well, it's so unfair. I mean, I can't believe when I listen to comedy on Sirius, how many recorded stuff, this is on the radio, that people have recorded, where they have to deal with some drunk in the audience. I can't believe, I mean, it's a high percentage.
It's, yeah.
They're your fans. They're there to, you're there on a recording, but this is the problem with clubs, is 2 drink minimum, two drinks is a lot for people. And yeah. And then you take people that go into four and five, and it's just not, I bet not one of those people who are a problem is not wasted.
Well, that's a, it's funny. I was talking to my therapist about this yesterday, about drink minimums.
Yeah.
The two drink minimum. Two drinks is what your doctor tells you you're allowed to have before you're harming yourself.
Right, exactly.
Because I said to my therapist yesterday, I was like, I don't understand it. Because I told her I had six drinks the night before, and she's like, wow, that's a lot. And I was like, not for me. I was like, for a girl who's 4'10", yeah, that's a lot. I was like, why do I have the same limit as that person?
Yeah, and I've also, I've been training. I've been building this up.
She looked disturbed about that.
Did
yeah.
She?
She was like, the fact that your tolerance is that high says something about you.
I was talking about that last night on stage at the Comedy Store. I was talking about fitness and stuff, and I was like, I always go back to Winston Churchill. This guy... Have you ever read Winston Churchill? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, no, you haven't. Because it'd be like reading five Bibles. Right. There's so much material. This guy is such a gem, such a thinker, such a doer. Wasted 24 hours a day. Like, literally would wake up, would drink sherry in the morning, and just drink all day long. And take a nap, get up, drink some more, and just, I mean, his whole life.
Yeah, I mean, it's you look at those, you watch like Mad Men and stuff. It's like,
I know.
They're boozing through the day.
And look, their lives were stormy.
Yeah, there were ups
there
and downs.
There was a lot of things they couldn't do.
There were ups and downs.
Six, yeah, you're fine with six.
That's what I
know, but two drink minimum. I mean, literally, you take that girl who's 4'10", and you put her in the club with her friends, and she has two drinks, and now she's bombed, and she wants to talk, and it isn't, I mean, the worst one is a drunk, middle-aged woman who has a little bit of money.
Yeah.
Trying to stop that person from talking to your show, good luck.
Forget it. I've had several situations where that woman is the problem at the show.
Uh-huh.
We get into it. She gets kicked out or leaves because right. She hates me.
Yeah.
And the husband stays and is like, and stays to enjoy the show to be like, thank you.
Wow.
Thank you for finally. Do you all see what I'm going through?
That's amazing. I thought you were going to go the other way. I thought you were going to say the guy waits to kick your ass.
Never once has the guy waited to kick my ass. Never, literally once. And, yeah. I've had it the other way. I had a guy in Philly spit on me.
Oh, my God.
During the show. And
spit on you?
He spit on me. Like, literally spit
after
on
an
me.
After you were a little back and forth?
Yeah, he was, like, being an asshole.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, dude, stop talking, man. And he was like, you know, fucking funny, dude. And he started heckling me. So then I, like, bent over, and I started doing this real, like, Italian, obnoxious Italian voice. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Should I go make a cheesesteak for you? You know? It wasn't even witty. It was just stupid. And he spit on me.
Oh, my God.
And the
God.
Crowd started, like, the crowd didn't know what to do. He got kicked out. And his girlfriend stayed and was, like, mortified. She's like, I'm so sorry. I was like, you're welcome to stay. Don't feel more. You're right. Not his responsibility. Or he's not your responsibility.
Yeah.
And then she hit on me after the show. But she was so drunk Jeez. That I thought she might spit on me.
Oh, my
God. So I didn't do
God.
It.
Where did the spit land?
On my chest.
Oh, my God.
Well, yeah, on my shirt.
People are animals.
It's disgusting. We live in a pig country.
We really do. I mean, there are times when I'm like, I'll record my set. You know, I always record on my iPhone. And I go back to listen. I'm like, oh, there was a joke in there. And you hear what's going on in the room. Like, you're not really aware of it when you're on stage.
Yeah.
Because it's just kind of like murmur or whatever. And you hear, like, people ordering and talking and fighting. And, like, it picks up all
of it. Yeah.
I am trying to come up with great material for these animals.
Yeah. It's a disgusting line of work we're in. I mean, it's just, it's
a disgusting line of work. It really is.
I don't know why.
And sometimes. But then you'll go to a nice theater or a nice club, you know, who runs the place well.
Yes.
And doesn't let people, they don't overserve them and they do all their things right. And then it's like, okay, this could be called an art form. Like, this
yes.
is, this I should be working hard on this at this because these people are appreciating it.
Yes. But yes, I agree. Yeah, you have a week at like, you have a week on like the Punchline, San Fran or something.
And right.
You go, this is why I do this. This is wonderful.
Exactly.
But then, you know, there are other places.
This is why people always wonder, like, why did Cat Williams go so crazy? Or why did Martin Lawrence lose his mind in the middle of La Cienega? Because they've spent they're stars for a certain period of time, but they've also dealt with these stories in this life for so long, and then you get big, and it's just people snap.
I can't imagine being a truly famous person like a Cat Williams or something like that, or an Amy Schumer. You know, like, these people.
No, I'm just you know Amy from like coming up. And just knowing, like, that's like when you have someone that's close to you, like, just who you knew from being in the clubs and just hanging out and talking, and then you watch them as it starts to happen, you really get the sense of, oh, this isn't just fun and games like, yay, now I'm rich and famous. This is a barrage of very complicated emotional and mental challenges.
Yeah, you're running a machine at that point. I mean, it's not, there is no more. I just did Bert Kreischer's podcast, and we were talking about celebrity, and Amy's name came up, and I said, you know, I've kind of lost touch with Amy, but I understand because she's in a different universe now. I was like, she's in another plane or whatever.
Yeah.
And he goes, do you know what Amy Schumer's doing today? And I said, what? I thought he was joking. He was dead serious. He goes, she is at the Senate talking about Chuck Schumer crying right now. And I was like, what? And I thought he was taking a shot at her. He's like, I'm dead serious. That's what she's doing right now.
Yeah.
She's at a Senate thing about her uncle. And I was like, yeah, that's what I mean. It's a world I don't understand.
I know. It really is. It's kind of insane. But, you know, that's the thing about, you know, you're doing your specials and stuff and something hits and something happens and all of a sudden you have a little bit more on you. I mean, that's a different level. I think we can both say it would be very rare for us to become Kevin Hart.
That's insane. That's
you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's
that's not. We don't have those ingredients that would put us into that level of fame.
I don't know how to play ball in that way. There's a level of ball playing you have to do.
Yeah,
I don't know how to do it.
Yeah,
I don't, and I'm not saying that as a positive or a negative. I don't know how to do it. Like it's there's a way, there's a charm and a charisma and a dance that you have to do to a certain extent with multiple tiers of different people.
Yeah,
and I don't have it in me. Like I'm too grumpy. I'm too like I don't want to talk about that. I'm too you know whatever.
Yeah, there are guys that you see that. They just kind of naturally built for that. Like, if it wasn't comedy, it would be acting or it would be singing or it would be something else. Like,
or politics, even.
They were going to go there anyway. You know, it's the hunger for that one thing.
Right.
Supersedes everything else in a way.
Yeah, it's an astounding thing to me. And I respect it, but it's not for me. It's definitely not for me. And I'm not even saying I could have done it had I had a different personality. Because it's also then your look and you're this and you're that, too. It's not something I have an interest in, thankfully, because I don't think I'm cut out for it.
Yeah, it is. It seems like a really strange existence. Now, you've been doing a lot more writing, also.
I was for a while.
Or are these just kind of like jobs that you kind of pick up for a little bit?
This goes back to your initial question about how long did I work on the special for.
Right.
So what had happened was I had done all those CDs, and the last one I was at the tail end of my stay in New York was the B-sides thing, and then I moved out to L.A.
Right,
and I wanted to be a writer, so I started staff writing on TV shows, and I did that pretty frequently for a while.
Oh, really?
And during that time, I did stand up, but I just did it less frequently. So it gave me suddenly now I had another focus.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have to put an album out to try to make more money
right.
by selling another album or whatever. And I was able to sit and marinate and figure out what I really wanted to do. And after 2.5 years of writing, I realized I don't want to be a staff writer.
Right.
And then I went back out on the road, and then so it was that 2.5 years into whatever it was after that, leading up to the special.
Gotcha.
Of working slowly on material.
Right.
But it taught me a lesson. I was like, oh, that's how I'm going to do it next time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not going to put something out next year. And I don't even know if I could, if somebody would want to. But if they did, I wouldn't do it. I'd wait 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that you're not the only one. I think a lot of people got into the mindset of like, I'm just going to put something out every year. And it's like, well, you know what? Really good stand-up comedy doesn't. It needs to bake longer than that.
Right.
really does. It takes a while, you know?
Yeah. You can put a passable special out every year, but you could put a great special out every 2 or 3 years.
Right,
if
exactly.
If you just let the stuff marinate a little bit and edit and adjust.
And you know, there's so many times when bits get really good after even like 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, all of a sudden you find another little wrinkle. You find a little something deeper in it. So, but why did... what was it about writing on staff that turned you off?
I'm a lippy guy. I have a bad attitude.
It's making the class clown go back to class again.
Yeah. It's a job, and it's not your show. And you're like, we should do this, and your boss, who is sometimes your friend, is like, I don't want to do that. I think it's stupid. And then the comic in you is like, fuck you, man. You don't know what you're talking about. You know?
And then guys who are pure writers just kind of swallow that and get quiet, and you just say it.
Because it's part of the gig. Like, that's staff. Again,
that
like, there's a certain way you have to maneuver for certain jobs. Like, and that's part of staff writing is, like, you have to let it roll off your back and realize you're there to deliver a product.
Yeah.
And if your little widget that you... invent doesn't fit into the product, you have to make a new widget. And I was like, I ain't making a new fucking widget. There's nothing wrong with this one. Redesign the whole product so this fits in it.
This should be my show. Aren't I the star of this show?
But I never had a bad experience. I had a lot of there was more fun than not fun.
Yeah.
I managed to keep all the jobs and not get fired from anything.
Oh, that's good.
Which was good. I got to write with some of my heroes and some of my friends, which was cool.
Some of your heroes?
Well, I got to work on the Wet Hot American Summer TV show.
Oh, no way.
So that was cool.
That's
like,
fun.
Working alongside David Wayne and Michael Showalter.
Yeah,
and then like seeing stuff that you wrote come out of like Elizabeth Banks's mouth on a TV show. You know, it's kind of weird.
Isn't that a rush when that first happens to you?
It is a rush.
It really is.
Yeah.
People don't really get it.
It's very cool. And it lasts for about 6 minutes.
Yeah. It does. Then you go like, oh, screw them. They didn't even say it right.
Yeah. And then you're like, I'm not getting any glory for that. It always comes back to stand-up. You're like, I want the glory. I want to say that.
It's a hard thing.
So, but it was cool. But I did notice early on... It's funny you say that because I did notice the first writing gig I wrote for stuff in New York as a consultant and stuff.
Right.
But the first real WGA writing job full time that I had was on Pete Holmes's talk show.
Uh-huh.
On TBS.
Right.
And I remember realizing this early on.
Yeah.
There were other people on the staff. I had a great time at the show. I enjoyed writing. I mostly did monologue work and stuff.
Cool.
And it was rewarding when things worked and whatever.
Yeah.
But I did not have the passion that certain writers had about, dude, I got to get my thing on. I got to get my thing on the air.
Right.
I didn't really care. It was like I handed stuff in. I was like, I hope you like this.
Yeah.
I got defensive about the stand-up.
Yeah.
I would get mad if Pete changed a joke. And I would say, no, you're killing the fucking joke, dude. But again, that was like stand-up stuff.
Yeah.
And that's when I first realized, like, I'm going to do this staff writing thing for a while, but this is not what I'm cut out for. Like, I'm not, like...
Yeah. That's a big shift. I mean, that really is a big shift. Like, I know guys that were comics and started doing it, and, you know, they started to like the money, and they liked, you know, they had, for whatever reason, or maybe they just liked the gig.
Right.
And this, you really are killing the stand-up part of you.
Yeah, you would, and you would hear horror stories on the lot about people.
Uh-huh.
I won't name names, but we were on the Warner Brothers lot.
Yeah.
And there are TV shows that you all love that are produced on that lot. And you would hear stories about people. Joe, did you hear about what happened at such and such today? Somebody cried again.
Just getting abused by the host?
Because people were just monsters. And then I was always like, why don't you say fuck you? And they'd be like, because it's my job. I can't say that.
Yeah.
And then you'd be like, oh, yeah, this person can't just go back out on the road.
Right.
There is no, there's I'm no not other, fucking doing this.
There's no other income.
And there's also no, even if you, you know, I think as a comic, even if you think I could quit and just go on the road.
Yeah.
But then even if that's not true, even if you quit and you couldn't get any road dates, you'd still have the bravado to do it. You know what I mean?
Right.
You'd still have the bravado to go, I don't give a shit. I'm out of here.
Yeah. No, that's true. You know, that's a good point.
You wouldn't even be thinking like, well, I don't have any dates on the books.
No, because you've lived a life of not having dates on the books before, and you know that you're going to, you'll pull through.
Yeah.
If you're not a comic, you don't think that way. Yeah. You're not as insane to say, I'm going to blow up this entire situation with no plan.
Yeah.
With no escape plan.
Yeah, because all of you people have no idea how far I'm willing to sink. You have no idea how much I will abuse my own dignity. I've done it before.
Right.
I don't care.
I'm actually pretty comfortable there.
Now, did you write on stuff? I mean, you had your own TV shows, but did you write for anybody else's show before that stuff?
No, I never had a staff job where I was going in and, like, you know, getting the badge and working on the show, a full season of a show. I had some offers to do it, and thankfully the money was bad enough where I was like, no, that wasn't enticing enough.
Right.
I did work recently on Red Oaks, which is a show on Amazon.
That's the golf course show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With Paul Reiser and Richard Kind. And
yeah.
It's great. And I was a writer, and I would write episodes on it. I got some scripts off of it. But it was run by... It's produced by Steven Soderbergh and Greg Jacobs.
Oh, cool.
And Joe Gagemi. And they're film guys.
Yeah.
They're all film guys. So they were like, why would we pay out of our budget to, like, have offices and assistants and writers on staff for 6 months,
right,
noodling around, eating Twizzlers and jerking off with, and when, why would we, this doesn't make sense,
right?
And so they just decided, we're going to make our new rules. So they just had these writer retreats where we would go to a hotel in Santa Monica for a week or 2 weeks, and just with these great writers, like, you know, 8 writers, we'd all just sit in a room and work and come up with great ideas and stuff. And then they would send us away to do the scripts. And then the two lead guys, Joe and Greg, would do all of the brush-up work and deal with the network and that kind of stuff. It was the greatest writing gig I ever had.
That's amazing.
So good. And it really made you realize it really is a waste. You would get so many more talented people, by the way.
I agree.
Right? Like, you would take a gig like that.
Because, I would do that.
Right?
That I would do again, because that to me is a profitable, not just financially.
Yeah.
A profitable gig. Experience-wise, you're getting scripts. You're getting treated like
a real,
dare
writer.
I say, an artist and not just a cog in the wheel.
Exactly.
You know, when you get into a staffing situation, it's very hard to eventually not just feel like you're filling a cubicle. And again, I don't say that against... I never had a bad experience with anybody I worked for.
Yeah.
I just realized it wasn't the life for me.
Right.
You know, so like... But it's...
Well, that's because you've got the comic thing in you. You still have that artist thing running through your veins. And that's why I mean, like, if you did run rooms like that, you'd get more talented people like yourself to come in and do it.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to get, you know, name any really talented comedian to give up for 6 months to go work on some young girl's show. But you would get them to come in for 2 weeks.
Oh, absolutely.
And write a script.
Absolutely.
And you would increase the the talent that you could bring in.
Absolutely. It's, you know, and the other thing is that, because I remember saying to Karen Kilgariff, who is similar to you and I in the sense that she is a performer, but she does drift in and out of these situations on TV shows and stuff. I remember saying to her 2 years ago, I said, you could feed the starving people of the world three times over with the amount of money they waste in these fucking staff rooms. Like,
absolutely.
It's unbelievable to me.
It's incredible.
Just constantly rewriting, all this shit.
Yep.
Let's sit around for weeks trying to figure out exactly how this story should go. My plan ultimately is to make my own stuff.
Right.
When I do make my own stuff, it is going to be me and two other producers,
right,
maybe one, going off, cracking the stories on our own.
Yeah.
Coming into whoever our writers are and saying, here's the eight outlines, who wants which one, and go write it.
Just work smarter.
Yeah, it's like we don't need to sit around for three fucking months in this room together.
And, you know, you hate to say it because you know people who made careers out of it, but, you know, what really shook it up was the writer's strike. When the writer's strike hit and everybody took that old fat way of working and to bust up the strike, which wasn't cool, but they broke it up and started working in different ways. It was
right.
Like, oh, maybe this bloated way of spending millions of dollars on people to order lunch every day is a dumb way to go.
It's so insane.
Yeah.
It's
insane. You know, that's how, you know, all the cool shows, I mean, not all of them. Some you really need need some help. You know, like if you're writing Game of Thrones, you're not noodling that in your room by yourself.
Right.
But Louie or Atlanta or, you know, some of these other kind of comedy shows,
right,
especially if you're the guy running it, like you would know your voice more than anybody.
Well, I think Game of Thrones is a guy because it's George Martin, whatever his name is.
Well, the guy who wrote the books, you mean?
I think he writes, I might be wrong, but I think he writes like the whole outline for the show and everything.
Oh, really?
I don't know if he's writing the scripts, but
right.
I think it's still a situation where it's like, here is what is going to happen.
Right.
Now write it.
Right.
And then, like, to me, there's even another phase after that you could do where it's like, just write the fucking thing. I'll have an expert come in 2 weeks from now and turn it into the right wording. It'll take him 20 minutes.
Right, exactly.
You don't have to sit there Googling, how would they say, I want a sandwich right now in 1655 or whatever fucking year that show takes place in.
In another world.
Yeah.
I'm here with Joe DeRosa, everybody, on a bonus Come to Papa. He has a new comedy special called You Let Me Down, which is on Comedy Central. It just came out, and it's streaming now on Comedy Central. You can buy it on iTunes, or if you subscribe to Apple Music, you can just put it onto your phone and listen to it on your way to work. You spend the $14 a month. Joe will still get paid. Isn't it nice that there's sun again in California?
It is.
Don't you feel like when you don't have a gig and it's raining, you're like, why do I live here? So if you don't have a gig and the sun's out, you're like, okay, this is all right.
I honestly feel the opposite.
Oh, really?
On the rainy days here, I'm like, thank you, I don't have to go outside today.
Finally.
Yeah, because I have a beanbag and I have lots of video games. And
do you play video games?
Dude, I do play video games. I'm not, I have all the latest systems and, you know, and I phased out recently. I was getting bored, and I kept buying games for my PlayStation 4, and I'd start them, and I was like, I don't know, man. Maybe I'm just done. Like, I would get bored
really?
So quickly. And then last Sunday, in the mail, I received my Nintendo Classic, the NES reboot that has 30 games loaded onto it already. And I bought it for shits and giggles. I was like, I just should have this because I had it when I was a kid. And dude, I put that thing on. I am fucking addicted to it. And I'm like, oh, this is what I wanted. I just missed these games, I think.
What, Donkey Kong? And
it's got Donkey Kong. It's got Donkey Kong Jr. It's got Castlevania 1 and 2. It's got all three Mario Brothers. All four Mario Brothers.
Really?
It's got the original Mario Brothers where you're in that blue screen
and,
with the pipes.
Yep.
And then it's got the trilogy, the Super
Does
Mario
it hold
trilogy.
Up?
They're great.
They're great.
Because here's the thing. I've played emulations of those games on my computer. And I was always like, This kind of gets old fast. Yeah. And then like I have other like reboot systems, like the ColecoVision one.
And, yeah.
And the same thing. I was kind of like, this gets old fast. This Nintendo thing, it is such an authentic experience that immediately you're back in it.
Really?
It's like this, I'm playing Nintendo again.
Really?
And it's flawless and it's perfect and it's just like it was when I was 10 and I love it.
And like, so you were gaming for a while though with, I mean, the graphics and the stories and everything's so complex and realistic now.
Yeah.
I mean, it is taking a step back from that. Is that
it's
a good
huge
thing?
Step back.
Is that a good thing?
Yeah, because it feels like I'm playing a game again and not trying to live a secret identity as a fucking in another life.
This is my problem. I really crave, I talk about it on this podcast all the time. I really crave, the same way I crave like smoking pot and just and not having responsibilities. It's like a Nirvana state that I never reach anymore.
Right.
Video games is the same thing. I won some money gambling on football, and I was like, what am I going to spend this on? I should get the new PlayStation.
Right.
I should get this, and I play one game, and I get like 20 minutes in, and then I get killed, and I'm like, ugh, I got to go all the way back to the beginning. I don't have time for this.
Yeah.
But I want to. I know the technology. I know that it's all... It seems so great.
It's fascinating stuff. I mean, it's the technology is amazing. Uh-huh. It's amazing. And there are certain games that I still get into. But I found myself, you know what? The latest game on PlayStation that I really like is, and I'm not even a sports fan, I got NHL 2K16.
Uh-huh.
And I just got it. So those games like go from $60 to $4 because the one comes out every year.
Right.
So I was like, it can't hurt. I'll just buy this. And the reason I bought it was because Steve Byrne was really into it.
Uh-huh.
And he told me that they had a button configuration called NHL 94, where it's four buttons.
Uh-huh.
It's you control the guy with the directional pad,
right.
And you have four buttons. Like
that's great.
Hustle, pass,
right.
Shoot. So it's like an old video game.
Yeah, not 12 buttons.
Exactly. So I was like, oh, I think I could get into that in the way I used to get into Tecmo Bowl when I was a kid.
Right.
And I did, and I loved it. And I found myself in GameStop like many times over the last year being like, I don't want to build a character. I don't want to role play. Yeah. I want to kill things. I don't want to think about how I kill them. I just want to plug it in and just start playing. And they're like, yeah, dude, there's not really anything like that
That's
anymore.
So crazy. It's that immersive now.
So when I got the Nintendo Classic, it was a pleasure.
Right. Just to fool around.
And they make new games that are like that. Uh-huh. They make plenty of games now that are throwbacks to those.
Uh-huh.
But it's just, it's not the same.
It's not.
It's like a band. It can be good, but most of the time, you know, you hear a band that plays like, they sound like the Stones. And it's like, well, right. They're not the Stones.
Yeah.
They're six suburban kids in a multi-gazillion dollar studio putting effects on everything.
So when you sit down to play this new Nintendo, I mean, it's pretty new. It's only been a couple days, but... How many hours will you put? What's the longest stretch?
This is the first time in literally years I had to pull myself away. I was like, okay, I've been playing this for 2 or 3 hours. I can't just sit here and
do this.
Have
to go do something.
Yeah. So, but I got it on a great week. It wasn't a very busy week. I had some podcasts to do and some radio to do.
Right.
But I didn't have a lot of shows. Like I had a show Monday night and I have a show Friday night. But
right.
So I kind of was able to futz around with it a little bit more.
That's good.
Which was nice.
Yeah.
But then I go. Because
that's all it represents to me is free time.
Yeah, it's great.
It's just like, just to have that time by myself.
I go on the road next week for 2 weeks. I think I might bring it with me because it's tiny.
Oh, really?
And
just throw it in your bag?
Yeah, it could easily fit in my bag. And like, it could fit in my carry-on bag easily. And
right.
I'm like, and I think like most, it's an HDMI hookup, but I feel like every hotel now has flat screen TVs in it and stuff.
For sure.
You know, so, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'll bring it.
Why not?
You know?
That's smart.
It's that big. It's like as big as that.
Like a book?
That picture frame there.
Yeah. That's it?
It's that small. I mean, it's not that thin, but the circumference of it is that small.
Same controllers?
Same controllers. And it's like that, you know, tall or whatever. It's tiny, dude.
Where did you get it?
I bought mine on Amazon for triple the price.
Because it would come the next day.
Well, no, because they sold out of them. So, it's like one of these iPhone situations where it's like, we don't know when there's going to be more.
And Nintendo did it themselves? They released it like
that?
Yeah,
it's officially Nintendo. Oh, okay. It's not some company that bought the right to do it. It's like, Nintendo is one of the few video game companies that is actually the company that it started as.
Right.
You know, so that's why it's so close. These other things, like Atari, went from this guy to that guy, and then these people bought it out. So by the time you get to the Atari reboot system that you buy at the Bed Bath & Beyond, it's problematic. It's not it's not proper. Like, the controls are cheaper and this and that. This was put out by Nintendo.
Yeah.
This is the first time they've ever reissued the games.
That's so cool.
And they did a great job. It's a really well-made device.
Wow.
But
get that.
Yeah, you should get it. It's, dude, triple the price, by the way, is $130.
Oh, really?
It's not ridiculous.
I went to Best Buy and I was like, maybe I'll buy a PlayStation, maybe I'll buy an Xbox. I'm just like looking around. The service was so awful at Best Buy. I was the only guy in there. You know, when we roll in like on a Tuesday at, you know, 11, like when nobody else is shopping.
Yeah.
I'm there. There's like 50 guys in blue shirts running around. Not one person would climb the ladder to get me the thing. And I was like, maybe this is a sign that I shouldn't buy this. And I just left.
Yeah. Yeah. I found that the trick at Best Buy is you got to go back to the TV section.
And they're the only ones who care.
Yeah. Ask for help. Because
they think you're going to get a $2,000 TV.
They're on it back there.
Right.
But then ask for the PlayStation and they'll be like, they'll get somebody for you.
Right.
But you're not getting anywhere in that.
It's so awful.
In that RCA cables section. They don't care. You know. What? But like, I don't think you should get the PlayStation. I think you should get this Nintendo thing and play like some basic games.
Yeah, and I can play for 20 minutes and be out.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't, whenever I see it loading, that big, that bar, and it's loading, and then Liam Neeson comes on and starts telling me that I grew up on
perfect
underground. I'm like, I can't.
Yeah.
I'm out of here.
It's too much, man.
Sport games are cool, though. Sports, like, to play those, it's like, it's action-packed. But it's, again, the 12-button thing. I'm just spaz out and start pressing everything because I don't know what's going to make the guy.
It's very complicated.
It is.
There's a lot of button combos. Sports games are like fighting games now. It's a lot of button combos. And then, like, it's also every sports game, and you don't have to do this with this NHL game, which I really like, is but at most, because I bought NBA 2K.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, that'll be fun. That'll be easy.
Yeah.
And I was looking at the manual. I was like, I literally don't understand this. Like, it was like getting into, you had to get into stats. And like, I was like,
is that because we're older? Like, my nephews wouldn't even look at the manual.
I usually don't look at the manual. Uh-huh. I only looked at it for this because I don't play sports.
Right.
And I was like, well, let me see, like, if I even kind of understand this.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, I don't want to build a team from the ground up. I want to
I don't want to be the manager.
Yeah. It's like, God damn it. You know, like, so,
yeah.
So, but, you know, I don't think the PlayStation's for you if you're feeling like that, too.
Yeah. It's too involved.
But you can.
But the graphics look so cool on it. Like, whenever I see, like, reviews or something, you know what I really should do? And I just figured this out the other day. I should just go on YouTube and watch people play. Like, I understand now why people watch other people play.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, there's a guy flying on a dragon. That's cool to look at for 10 minutes, and now I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is fun. I got really into, like, a lot of the YouTube, the review videos.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the Angry Video Game Nerd and, like, and Nostalgia Critic. And
they're fun to watch.
I enjoy them.
Yeah.
The early Angry Video Game Nerd's my favorite, but it gets a little more produced as it goes on.
Uh-huh.
But if you watch like the first couple seasons of it, like the first two seasons, three seasons, it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Because it is truly, he's playing a character, but he is truly becoming incensed at the way these old video games, how unfair they are. And he's just screaming at it. It's really funny.
Have you had any desire? I mean, you know, you write and you do stand up and you act and, you know, you do all this stuff. And part of this emerging part of show business that has come up is just this, these this vlogging and people being on YouTube and using doing stuff on their own, creating their own stuff. Have you had any desire to go into that?
Nah, not
part of
really.
It at all? No.
Initially, when it first broke, I gave it a shot. I had a vlog series with Comedy Central.
Oh yeah,
years and years ago. It did nothing. Like it did. Yeah. And I just,
what was the idea behind it? Was it just you ranting?
No, it was. I was on a shoestring budget trying to create entertaining YouTube videos that were about me in some way.
Uh-huh.
So like
scenes kind of thing.
You know, like one the first I remember the first one. The first one was like, I have this new vlog and I have to figure out what kind of attitude is going to get me the most downloads. So it was me doing all these different vlog people.
Yeah.
You know, but I—that's a whole different arena.
It totally is.
I'm not into it. I'm not really that into it.
It's enticing just when you see the numbers of it. Like,
sure,
my kids watch like a couple guys who everybody thinks it's 6 million people subscribe to this guy,
yeah.
And he's not funny. you know what I mean? It's so far from really funny.
Yeah.
They don't care. They're into it for kind of a different reason. But you see 6 million people, it's like,
Yeah.
But it really is its own thing.
And there's no way of telling, in my opinion, there's no way of telling what is going to catch on and what's not.
Nope.
So I'm not, and I guess you don't have that guarantee either with TV or anything, but
no.
I feel like there's a little more of a structured system with television. With the internet, it's like, you know, this 7-year-old burn victim that's lip syncing 50 Cent is killing me in the numbers right now. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I know.
Like, you know,
yeah.
Okay, you know,
yeah.
Like it's, I just don't understand what takes off. But I also think too, that's a lot of it is, and I'm not trying to shit on what anybody does, but I think a lot of it is, you know, and I don't want to get political, but I think we're seeing it with Trump now too, is like, I think people want everything around them to seem doable. You know what I mean? Like,
no.
So you'll see YouTube videos and you go, that's not that good. Why does it have 8 million hits?
Right.
And I'm like, oh, probably because the people that like it are not intimidated by it in any way. They're watching it and going, I could do that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because if you go and try to find the real shit on you, like there's stuff where it's like, there's some really produced stuff on there. Like,
sure.
That feels like little mini movies and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Stuff's not getting 8 million hits. You know?
Right. No, you're right. I mean, like when my kids watch like these DIY videos, you know, like a girl like, you know, making cupcakes or just putting on her makeup, they feel like she's a celebrity, but they also feel like she's one of them. You know, they feel
right.
Like, oh, it's like my friend, you know, that's why they watch it.
That's what everybody wants right now. Everybody wants to be like, I should be able to talk directly to Tom Hanks. Oh, I can on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting.
I want the president to tweet things that I would tweet at Nordstrom's.
There is that thing. Like, do you find when you're out on the road and doing your stand up and stuff or just building or like heading out onto the road, like, do you feel like, I mean, people want to have this reaction, this interaction with you, but how do you treat it? Like, do you feel like you have to give them every minute of your time, or do you feel like, no, I work hard at this stand-up, I put it on stage, that is my thing, that's our relationship? You know what I mean?
I'm much more tolerant about it than I used to be, because I got myself in trouble a couple times getting too angry. Nothing happened. I just wasn't allowed to work at a certain club anymore or whatever, you know. So I started to learn, like, okay, that's not the way to handle it. Even you have to be able to deal with this,
right?
You know? So I'm much more passive about it. I'll talk over it for a lot longer than I used to. When I do deal with it, I try to be sort of amicable about it, unless somebody's being a real asshole.
Wait, what are you talking about? Are you saying...
Like hecklers, you mean?
Oh, like hecklers? No, I meant...
Oh, what do you mean? I'm sorry.
I meant just your day-to-day interaction with the fans. Like you said, like with the Tom Hanks, I can talk to Tom Hanks.
Oh.
And I should talk to Tom Hanks. Like, there are comedians who spend all of their time, you know, dealing with their fans, talking with their fans, one-on-one kind of stuff? Or do you feel like, Here's a good example. Question: when you go do a show, do you go into the lobby and meet everybody after the show, or do you get ready for the next show?
I mean, sometimes I will. My thing is always this, and I'm not even in the ballpark next to the ballpark where the celebrities are. But my thing has always been this: if I meet somebody, I like to have a genuine interaction with them.
Right.
Sometimes I'm able to stand out and meet people after the show. Sometimes I'm not able to.
Right.
Because a lot of the time it's just logistics.
Yeah, exactly.
But, if I'm able to, I do it.
Yeah.
I talk to people. I say hi. And it kind of ends there for me. On Twitter, most of the time, like once in a while, I'll respond specifically to somebody.
Right.
But usually I just favorite things, and that's my way of saying I saw this and thank you.
Right, right.
But I am not keen on this world. And it's not because of me versus fans.
Right.
It's me respecting you as a person and vice versa.
Right.
I don't like the idea of ultimate connectivity all the time. And
right.
I think we're seeing the tipping point. It's doing more harm than good.
Yeah.
And it's creating a very, very unsavory personality type.
Mm-hmm.
And that personality type seems to be growing.
Right.
So I don't like it. I don't think it's good. I think you need to put effort into things in life. I think it's led to Tinder, where people think they should meet their soulmate by swiping from their couch.
Yeah.
I think it's led to think pieces that are one-sided and unresearched
mm-hmm.
all over the internet. I think it's led to people blocking one another
yeah.
and insulting one another rather than having real conversations.
Yeah.
And, it's been growing over the last 20 years or maybe even 30. It started with reality TV
yeah.
and everybody thinking it was so cool to see the president play the saxophone and talk about pot on the Arsenio Hall show.
Right.
And now here we are and everything is level. Everything is I'm just as good as you are. And it's
yeah.
like, look, do you have the same human rights as everybody? Of course. But how dare you think you have the right or the education or the knowledge that you should be allowed to review things on the same level as a Richard Roper?
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
the
completely.
Fact that Rotten Tomatoes is two sides, audience and... I don't give a shit about the audience score.
Right. Yeah.
I want to hear what the critics had to say.
Right. No, exactly. And that extends to all aspects of life now. It's like there's... And that's what I... there are people, it almost makes me more proud to be a comedian that works hard at being a comedian because that thing is special. That thing,
yes.
If you work really hard, like you put out your special, which I'll plug right now. You Let Me Down on Comedy Central.
Thank you.
You put a lot of work into it
mm-hmm.
and you put it up. That is a special thing. That isn't a vlog. That isn't a hot Instagram post. This is a real That's a movie that you made.
Thank you. And you've yeah. made them too. So it's
no,
like
but
you know.
It is. And
yours were a big inspiration, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
We used some footage from your special as reference shots. Like when I was trying to explain,
oh, very cool.
to the crew and stuff. Like when we do a over the shoulder, let's see how they did it when Tom's here. Like
oh,
it's a
nice.
Little. It's just a little off. It's not exactly. So the new one wasn't out yet, but the two that you have on Netflix
right.
were a big inspiration and made me think like, oh, you can do something that's like visually different and
yeah.
has a theme. And
you put real thought and work into it, and I thank you for the compliment, but you put a lot of work and thought into this thing, and it's like it almost – you should be more proud of that, especially because of all the stuff you're saying of everything's leveled out. I mean – everything is to a degree.
Sure.
But people just spouting off is leveled out and their access is leveled out. But not a lot of those people can make what you made.
I agree with that. And I think that about anybody that makes anything.
Anything.
I think it's tremendous that people make movies on a $3,000 budget and who cares if it's good or not. It's
right.
It's they did it.
Yeah, right.
That's really great.
Yeah.
I think it's great. And I think it is a shame that that thing then becomes a product that gets put onto several platforms that anybody can say whatever they want about and actually affect its rating or whatever. Mm-hmm. That part sucks, but
yeah,
but that doesn't matter. Here's why that doesn't matter. And I've witnessed this as a 1.5-star album guy.
Uh-huh.
My checks keep escalating. The amount when I get royalty right. checks, they're getting higher and higher.
Uh-huh.
Because the people that really care about the product, the people that really are the fans,
right.
they don't look at that shit.
No.
They go, because I don't look at that shit.
No, they just look, hey, Joe's got something new.
I'm a fan.
Right.
There's no way a 1-star review is going to make me not buy a record by one of my favorite bands.
You're right,
or whatever.
Exactly.
Or if I really want to read a book, I'm not going to not read it because somebody goes, I am stupid.
No.
I don't care. I want to read it.
It's not a self-preservation thing. I don't read comments. I never go into comments on things that I like. You know, if I see, like, if I'm just, like, trolling around on YouTube looking at bands or whatever, I never even think to go down below that. Yeah. I really don't.
Yeah, I really try not to.
And, you know, the fan thing, it's such a weird thing because I think over time you get the people that, who just like you and like are interested in you. You know what I mean? Like I have these great fans now, and I started getting into baking sourdough bread. I like post stuff about sourdough bread all the time.
You had a bunch of what are they called? Loaves.
Yeah, right in the kitchen right now.
Or is it loaves?
Loaves of bread.
It would be loaves, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a sourdough book right there. And this has kind of spawned all of these nice people. There's like all of these, no one's coming on Twitter to shit on your bread and wish you had AIDS.
Right.
They're just like, they want to show you their bread and they want right. to talk about your comedy. And it's like, all of a sudden I have like this group of people who are kind and cool and fun.
Right.
Those people I love to interact with.
And by the way, I'm not, and I think you know this, but just for the sake of the audience, if anybody is confused by what I'm saying, I'm not against negative reviews. If you really want to leave a review of something and say, hey, I didn't like it for these reasons, fine.
Yeah.
But it's the people that go past that with like entitlement. Look, I do a horror movie review podcast. I certainly talk if I don't like something, I'm not going to sit there and
right.
say I liked it.
Right.
But I'm also not going to try to talk like, I'm not going to talk from a place of ignorance either.
Right.
Or I'm not just going to be like, fuck that guy, stupid head.
Right, exactly.
You know, whatever.
I hope he gets cancer.
Yeah, yeah.
That would never be in one of your reviews.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's, you know, so it's, you know, but you know, even with that being said, to the people that have made movies that I've not liked,
yeah,
they made a fucking movie still. You know?
Right, I know. So what do you think, like what you said earlier that, and you kind of laid the groundwork for it in writing and doing stand-up and acting and doing all this different stuff. What is the, when you're sitting there on your couch and you finally put the video game down.
Right.
And you're thinking, the thing I want to make is a film, a show?
Ultimately, I want to keep doing stand-up. I don't ever want to stop that.
Sure.
You know, because I love it.
Yeah.
But the other thing I want to do is, I want to make my own content. Like,
yeah.
I'm very interested in that. Like, so I have ideas that we have shopped or are shopping and
right.
whatever. And,
for film or TV?
TV.
Yeah.
I love horror movies.
Yeah.
I love movies. I've kind of lost my, when I first started out, I had a real thirst to get into film.
Uh-huh.
I've kind of lost it.
Oh, yeah? Why?
It just seems like such an impossible industry to crack into at this point. There's so much content now. And I feel like with TV, you get a bit of a fairer shot.
Yeah.
Because even though there's tons of TV shows that stream on everything from YouTube to Netflix to whatever, you can, I feel like you have a shot.
Yeah.
It's that there's more of it. If you hook somebody in the first episode, they might stick with it.
Right.
It might keep moving.
Or just the part of being able to make it.
Yeah. movies, I'm like, I'm lost.
I know big people in film that have trouble getting films off the ground.
Yeah.
It's like, you know.
Yeah.
It's that business has gotten so precarious.
It's, yeah, when you see, you know, when Tom Hardy is doing a show on FX.
Right.
instead of the next blockbuster film that he could be doing, you're like, yeah. Why is this? Something's up over here.
right, exactly. But the other side of it, and as a horror fan, I could probably entice you a little bit. You can make this stuff without, I mean, you're not going to make the next Pirates. It's not going to be distributed like that. But if you simply just wanted to make it, you could make something in 30 days.
You could.
You know, you really could.
And I wrote a horror screenplay with a friend of mine a while back, a few years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got it to people.
Yeah.
People that had a little bit of clout or whatever said, I'll read it and whatever. You know, it just didn't go anywhere.
Right.
So that's part of it, too. I feel like I'm on such better footing with television.
Yeah.
Because I've done some television.
Yeah.
And I've written for television. So I feel like I can go into a television room.
Right.
And convince them a lot easier.
Right.
A lot more easily than I could if I was going into a film room.
Right.
They'd
yeah,
be like,
for sure.
What have you done? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no. I mean, but it's just the... Everything becomes enticing now. Back to... Your original thoughts of I was making an album every year.
Right.
You can make films now. You can make... The technology has kind of given us the opportunity where if you want to crank something out, if you have an idea that you really are passionate about and want to put out, there's very little to stop you now. You don't really have to go in the room with the guys to get permission to make your film. You just got to kind of... hustle it up and do it.
Well, that's the thing, because making it now is a completely different scenario than it was. Meaning you made it.
Right.
As a fill in the blank for the job. Like it's a different definition, you know.
Yeah.
20 years ago it was becoming discovered or in a way and then you know, like blowing up in a certain, you know, it was a little, there were fewer slots, you know.
All right, let me play the devil's advocate on the other side of it before we get out of here. There is all this opportunity. You can make all this stuff. You can write. You can act. You can do all of this. Do you ever crave just the purity of screw all that stuff? I'm not going to spread myself out. I'm putting it all into the act. This special that just came out is great. The next one's going to be even better. I'm putting laser beam focus on stand-up.
No, I totally get that. And I that's kind of what I've been doing. Not that specific.
Right.
Because one of the things I said this year to my manager in the beginning of the year was, I said, I don't want to be a slave to the road.
Right.
I want to do the road, but I want to do it in a constructive way. The second it starts becoming, I have to do this and I have to do that, or else my rent doesn't get paid.
Yeah.
We're getting into a dangerous place again, and I don't want to do that.
Right.
So let's look at these other ideas. Let's see how to make these things work.
Right.
So sold one thing, which I'm very happy about. We'll see what happens. But
yeah.
I have another thing right behind it that I want to try to sell.
Right.
And I have a book proposal that I'm shopping right now.
Nice.
So it is lasering the focus, but it's just lasering it to saying... The types of projects I want to do when I'm home are these two things.
Right.
And then I want to go on the road and do this other thing. I just don't want one to control the other.
Yeah.
So,
smart balance. That's the way to do it.
I think you have to have some balance.
Yeah. Completely.
Otherwise, you start going a little crazy.
And especially, you know, at a point when, you know, you're not going out and selling out, you know, massive houses.
Right.
On your own term, you've got to kind of, you have to do these other things to fuel it, to fuel the career.
And I will tell you this right now. If I only did the road, I'll die.
Didn't you know that when you were starting?
Yeah.
I did too.
I'll die. I don't have self-control. I can't do the road all the time and not drink too much and not make stupid decisions.
Because you get sad?
I get bored.
You get bored.
You're ripping your fucking hair out after a while. You can only, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's just, you know, and you do get lonely, you know?
It is lonely. It's definitely lonely. You know what's going to solve the lonely, though?
What's that?
Your new Nintendo.
Said it as you're choking down the tears.
Your new girlfriend.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I can manipulate one of the ports on the back of it.
Joe DeRosa has been my guest. His new stand-up special, You Let Me Down, is streaming now on Comedy Central and iTunes and any place you can steal it. he's a hilarious comedian. Make sure you you check this out and buy it and support him and go see him live. Where can people find out where you're going to be heading?
When's this come out?
This is today.
Today.
In an hour.
Oh, all right. I'll be at Laughs Boston.
Nice.
And the
love that club.
Vermont Comedy Club.
Oh, yeah? In Burlington?
Burlington, yeah.
Have you been there before?
No, I think I'm there next week, and then I'm at Laughs Boston the week after.
Wow, that's a great... I'm a little jealous of that little run.
They both seem like great runs. I'll be in New York in between, but probably just drinking. I don't think I'm going to do any sets in New York. They seem like great clubs, but that's where I'm headed.
Yeah. So, hey, are you in New York February 22nd?
No. I mean, that's the Saturday of...
No, it's a...
Oh, wait.
It's a Wednesday.
Yes.
You are?
That's my last night in New York, because then the 23rd I leave... To go to Laughs Boston.
Okay, because I'm doing live Come to Papa at the Village Underground.
Oh.
And I'm looking for another comedian.
I would love to do it.
Oh, how about that?
Done deal.
Sweet. All right, we'll figure out those details. Make sure you check out Joe DeRosa's new special, You Let Me Down, Comedy Central. If you don't have time and you're in L.A. and you don't have time to go see him and you don't want to stream it on iTunes, just get on... Just drive around the valley, and you'll see his billboard. That's how I found out.
Yes.
Thanks for coming, Joe.
Thanks, buddy.
Enjoy your life, everybody.